I'm positive that the Russian government will adopt a law by the end of this year about the formation of the park.
A new park bridges the cultures of Siberia and Western Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Fairbanks votes again on regulating air quality.
People who are supporting ballot measure 3 don't want dirty air and water, and they want to be good neighbors.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A fall can cause traumatic brain injury and require follow-up care outside of your home community. To help prevent falls, eat foods that are rich in calcium and vitamin D, like fish head soup and kelp with herring eggs. Be active, walk often, participate in subsistence activities, and have your vision checked at least once a year. More information at anthc.org. This message sponsored by the ANTHC Injury Prevention Program.
Five people have been indicted on charges of embezzling almost $500,000 from the Trident Seafoods plant in Kodiak. U.S. Attorney Ani Stewart says the nearly $500,000 discrepancy was discovered sometime after bookkeeper Issa Wolf was fired 2 years ago.
She'd been there a very long time and actually was there years before the embezzlement started. But her performance started to decline, and when she was terminated, the folks that came in to take over discovered that a lot of fraudulent accounting had been going on for quite some time.
The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges that Wolf wrote 52 checks from the Trident Seafoods account between January 2008 and August 2010 to four friends and the underage son of one of them. Also indicted were Jeremy Smith and Jamie Fathke of Kodiak, Ann Wilson of Kent, Washington, and Valerie Olivares of Corpus Christi, Texas. Stewart says Wolf was taken into custody on Friday and Smith was already jailed on unrelated charges and turned over to federal custody. The two were scheduled to be arraigned this afternoon in Anchorage Federal Court. A Trident spokesman could not be reached for comment. National parks spanning the Bering Strait are now in a stage of active planning after last month's agreement between Russia and the United States to go ahead with them. The Russian National Park head has been looking at public lands in Alaska for the past 2 weeks. APRN Steve Heimel spoke with him before he headed back to Moscow.
It's now very much down to the nuts and bolts stage of forming national parks on the Russian side. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton signed the agreement on September 8th in Vladivostok, and about a week later, Sevalod Stepanitsky was here with a map of five conservation areas and a translator.
I'm
positive that the Russian government will adopt a law by the end of this year about the formation of the park.
That's right. The deal is due to be finalized in just months. The five Russian protected areas are matched up with existing parks on the U.S. side. Cape Krusenstern National Monument, north of Kotzebue, and Bering Land Bridge National Preserve, comprising the northern part of the Seward Peninsula. Stepanitsky appears to be Vladimir Putin's point man for parks and conservation. He's the deputy director of state policy and environmental protection in the Ministry of Natural Resources and Ecology. He has been pushing conservation for years in Russia with the accent on ecotourism as an economic development tool. He cited a number of transboundary conservation agreements already in place with China, Mongolia, and other nations. They have experience with that part of it, he said, but the Americans are pointing the way toward how to protect lands that sometimes need to heal.
Of course, there are many resemblances because the same geographical resemblance between both territories because it's the same territory, basically. However, we've learned that Alaska has significant experience how to preserve territory, how to save them, and how to protect from anthropogenic factors or human activities. In Russian Far East, in the northern part of the Russian Far East, there is a very deep impact of human activities.
The agreement will significantly lower barriers to travelers wanting to see the Russian side, simplifying the process enormously. There's already an agreement in place to make visas easier to get. Stepanitsky is basically promising an open border for transboundary parks for visitors.
Я думаю, что образование парка даст дополнительный толчок на облегчение решения вопроса об
обучении. Yes, the formation of the park, national park Birinji on this territory will allow, I believe, to liberate requirements for visitation of these territories.
Of course, for now, there's a serious lack of transportation options to get there, but it appears that the opportunity for eco-tourism entrepreneurs outfitting trips to the Russian parks will soon exist. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Fairbanks borough voters consider a ballot proposition in tomorrow's municipal election that, if passed, will stop the borough government from regulating heating devices. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it's the latest volley in the war over air quality.
Proposition 3 would continue and strengthen a citizen initiative passed 2 years ago that stopped the North Star Borough from banning, prohibiting, or fining residents for using home heating devices. Wording of the new version is even more all-encompassing, eliminating any borough authority over appliances like wood stoves, which are blamed for degrading wintertime air quality. Prop 3 sponsor Representative Tammy Wilson of North Pole says the state already has authority and regulations that cover smoke.
They are required by law to uphold the statutes that are there, and what the borough would have to do would be a duplication of what currently exists.
A pending borough ordinance would set a tougher smoke standard than what the state currently has and enact fines for polluters who don't respond to warnings and education. The State Department of Environmental Conservation employs a much slower enforcement system using violation notices and court action for chronic polluters. Wilson says the borough proposal is too strict, given cold air inversions that trap pollutants at ground level in Fairbanks.
And it really concerns me that we may make everybody violate the law for something that is out of our control.
Wilson supports expansion of borough programs that help people replace polluting stoves and boilers and teaches them clean burning. She says those efforts have reduced fine particulate levels that landed Fairbanks in violation of federal standards. Fellow Prop 3 advocate Maria Rensel says everybody wants clean air.
People who are supporting ballot measure 3 don't want dirty air and water, and they want to be good neighbors. They just want to be able to live here and use this traditional renewable resource.
The borough is working with the state on a plan due in December for getting Fairbanks into compliance with federal standards and avoiding any repercussions. Former borough mayor and co-chair of No on 3, Jim Whitaker, says keeping the borough from regulating stoves and boilers will result in unacceptable state controls down the road.
They'll put harsh penalties. They'll be very restrictive. They won't have real solutions for Fairbanks.
Whitaker acknowledges that stove changeouts and education are improving air quality, but adds polluters still need to be dealt with, especially when weather conditions exacerbate the smoke problem.
You always hope that you can get there without punitive measures, but we should also recognize that we probably had a much warmer than normal winter last year, and the first cold winter with inversions that we have, we're going to be back in the same situation again.
For some Fairbanks residents, smoke isn't just politics. Patrice Lee's son collapsed from a heart problem doctors tie to breathing fine particulates on an especially smoky day in Fairbanks. Lee says there has to be an efficient way to stop polluters and protect public health.
If I have a neighbor smoking us out and I make a complaint to the state, it could be days at best for the state to respond. And by then, the damage is done.
Lee says pollution is a localized problem that depends on where you are and what's being burned at any given time and is best dealt with as a community. Voters get their chance to weigh in on what role the borough has in regulating burning in tomorrow's municipal election. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Alaska Sea Life Center releases a young seal pup who almost died back into the wild.
With the condition that she was in, being skinny, having all those puncture wounds, she would not have lasted more than a couple more days.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
The body of 48-year-old Debbie Kamaktuak was found last Friday on the beach southwest of Unalakleet. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Epson says a Bering Air helicopter pilot reported spotting the body southwest of Unalakleet. A local search effort continues today for 41-year-old David Sloco, who is still missing. 1 week ago, Sloco and Kamaktuak left Koyuk in a 17-foot boat. Alaska State Troopers believe the boat capsized. It was found on Thursday, upside down on the beach 13 miles southwest of Unalakleet. Ipson says in the search for Sloco, a state trooper scanned the coastline in a helicopter over the weekend.
Yesterday, there were about nine boats, the aluminum skiffs that were out searching the shoreline, looking in the shoreline. But as of today, troopers have suspended their efforts in the search pending new leads. You know, if other information comes up, then we can find David.
The couple had two dogs with them. The bodies of both dogs drifted ashore in the same area. An outbreak of chickenpox in Soldotna and Homer have state public health officials worried about the high number of local children who are not receiving vaccinations. KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports.
An above-average number of reported cases of chickenpox, or varicella by its scientific name, have worried state public health officials enough that they sent out a statewide alert Friday. So far, in just the month of September, 9 cases of chickenpox have been reported on the Kenai Peninsula, 3 of them in Soldotna and 6 in Homer. Dr. Brian Yablon works in the Alaska section of epidemiology. He says the numbers are very concerning.
Chickenpox is a very contagious disease. Most cases are usually mild. In certain populations, like healthy older children and young adults, it can actually cause severe illness. And it can also be a cause of severe illness in very young children, in pregnant people. So anytime that we see an increase in chickenpox activity, that's concerning for us.
All of the cases on the peninsula are children, says Yablon, ranging in age from infants to 14 years old. Yablon would not say which local schools had reported cases of chickenpox, but did say that in Homer, the outbreak has gone from being an isolated incident at one or two schools to becoming an issue for the entire community. So why are kids in Homer coming down with chickenpox? Dr. Yablon says it may be because many of them are not getting vaccinated. A vaccine for chickenpox was introduced in the 1990s, and the number of chickenpox cases has been steadily declining ever since. Public health officials, including Yablon, recommend that all children receive 2 doses of the vaccine, once when they turn 1 year old and another when they are about to enter kindergarten.
The cases that we've seen in Homer, the 6 suspected or confirmed cases, are all in children who are preschool or school age who are unvaccinated. And some of the schools in that area have relatively high rates of exemptions from vaccines, where as many as 30% of children may not be vaccinated.
A 30% exemption rate is much higher than average, says Yablon.
Some people have religious reasons. Some people have other personal beliefs. And I think also, depending on your social group, what people's friends do, I think, plays a large role.
Yablon says the benefits of the chickenpox vaccine are preventing a disease that can cause skin lesions, severe scarring, bacterial infections, pneumonia, and encephalitis. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
The North Pole Economic Development Corporation is planning to host the International Federation of Sled Dog Sports 2013 World Championships. 24 events are scheduled to take place over the course of 20 days in February and March, but disagreement over a list of banned substances for sled dogs has put the long-distance race in jeopardy. KYC's Emily Schwing reports.
The International Federation of Sled Dog Sports, or IFSS, has hosted a world championship with sprint and distance events every 2 years since 1995. In 2013, the organization hopes to make use of a 200-mile course established by the Two Rivers Dog Mushers Association. But TRDMA Race Committee Chair Scott Chesney says there are a few problems with that plan.
Well, there's been two major problems with putting this thing on. Is one of them was a lack of information. There doesn't seem to be anybody dedicated on the IFSS side. The other problem is that their list of banned drugs for dogs has been an issue.
Since 2008, all internationally recognized sports are required to adhere to the World Anti-Doping Agency's drug laws. In the mushing world, the list of banned substances includes antibiotics, thyroid medication, and even some foot creams distance mushers use as part of their dog care regimen on the trail. Chesney says the regulations raised eyebrows within the local mushing community.
You know, for the foot medications and some of these things, okay, yeah, it's a difference between a drop dog, a dog staying home, or a dog getting dropped at a dog drop. On the other hand, it can be life-threatening. So, you know, it's a whole different class of thing.
The banned list also includes antacids. Long-distance sled dogs can develop gastric ulcers during training and racing. Drugs like Pepcid and Prilosec are recommended by Iditarod and Yukon Quest head veterinarians because they can help prevent acid production in dogs' stomachs. IFSS Vice President of Sport Helen Lundberg is a sprint musher. She admits she's unfamiliar with dog care for long-distance sled dogs. She says she had no idea the list of banned substances might pose a problem for mushers that plan to enter the long-distance race.
When it was brought to my attention, I immediately realized that we need to do something.
Lundberg asked the International Sled Dog Veterinary Medical Association to look into the drug regulations during their annual meeting in Alberta. That meeting took place this past weekend.
I hope that with ISDVMA, we can come up with an up-to-date list, you know, that all this that really is good for the long-distance dogs shouldn't be banned, you know.
During their September meeting, members of the Two Rivers Dog Mushers Association voted to dissolve their relationship with IFSS. But Scott Chesney says there's still a chance for IFSS to include the Two Rivers 200 on the list of world championship events.
TRDMA wants to be a good neighbor, but on the other hand, we can't endanger our dogs. So I decided that we would hold off on that to see if anything happened. And I've been told by both IFSS and North Pole Economic Development that they are working on getting either a therapeutic use exemption or the rules changed for the banned substances.
TRDMA will revisit the issue to make a final decision during their monthly meeting tonight. So far, four international teams have signed up for the World Championship distance race. Chesney says the Two Rivers 200 will still take place in 2013, regardless of the outcome. For KUAC News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
When injured marine creatures are stranded on Alaska's beaches, they're taken to the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward for recovery. The center has rehabilitated walrus, seabirds, otters, and plenty of harbor seals. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez was on hand last week when one of those seals was returned to the wild in Unalaska.
Back in June, a tiny harbor seal, barely a week old, was found near a seafood processing plant in Unalaska. The pup was scrawny, and she had clearly been attacked by another animal.
With the condition that she was in, being skinny, having all those puncture wounds,
the stranding
would not have lasted more than a couple more days.
That's Tim Lubling, the stranding coordinator with the Alaska Sea Life Center. The seal was immediately shipped out to him and his staff so they could treat her. Their veterinarians had to wire the seal's jaw shut, and staffers fed her from a tube for weeks. They also gave her a name, Kerrigan, as in Nancy. She got the moniker because it was an Olympic year and because she was pretty beat up when she came in. But like her namesake, Kerrigan recovered fast, and after a couple months, she was able to spend time with other seals and compete against them for fish.
She was a fighter the whole time.
By September, it was clear that Kerrigan was able to fend for herself in the wild. So Loebling and his crew made arrangements to have her released near the place where she was found. On Wednesday, Kerrigan was sent back to Unalaska on a pen airplane. She was transported in a doggy crate with a label that told cargo handlers they were dealing with a wild animal and warned them not to stick their fingers in. Shortly after touching ground, Kerrigan was taken to the bay where she was initially discovered. A crowd of about 40 kids was there, and they gushed over her speckled coat and big eyes. But an orange satellite tracker attached to her back left them with some questions. It looked funny. Loebling told the audience that the device would allow people to follow Kerrigan's movements.
And what that will do is that will actually transmit information exactly where she is. It's one of the things that your parents would like to do to you when you go to college so that they know exactly where you are at all times.
After answering a few more questions, it was time to let Kerrigan go. The crate was set up on the beach, and a local student was selected to open the door. And after a few minutes, she was gone, and the crowd was left saying its goodbyes. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
Carving work continues on the final beams meant for the ongoing construction of the Chief Shakes Tribal House in Wrangell. KSTK's Ariel Van Cleef recently visited the carving shed and filed this report.
You can hear the sound of a blade meeting wood coming from a large shed in downtown Wrangell. Two women are busy working on long, rectangular beams of red cedar with adzes, which is an axe-like tool that's shaped a bit like a curved L. Susie Kaysinger and Linda Churchill have been adzing since last year for the ongoing construction of Chief Shakes Tribal House. The two are finishing work on the final beams, which will be used to form the fire pit.
This is going to look nice, though. I really like the boards that have the knots the best because it gives it so much more character.
The carving shed itself is about the length of a barge container and as wide as about two. The floor is covered in pieces of wood, and the whole area is coated with a rich, sweet smell. Kaysinger says she has the scent of cedar on her clothes and skin after she's put in her eight-hour workday. She explains adzing is a slow process of taking small notches out of the beams while following the grain of the wood.
The rows are supposed to be between a quarter and a half inch wide, and you try to just follow the row down and just keep your lines. That's a really big challenge, is to try to keep the line straight. It's getting a lot easier now, but now that we're almost done.
It's physically straining work, and both note the muscles in their forearms have gotten bigger, and they say their hands have grown stiffer since they began about a year ago. The women kneel on the boards or stand on top or beside them with their hand tools. Because of the shape of the adze, the two actually swing the blade toward their bodies to make their notches. Churchill points out it can get a little dangerous.
Last year I jumped over a timber and threw my knee right into the adze, and it scared the heck out of me. Cut right through my pants, just whoosh, cut my kneecap right smack, man. I was lucky it didn't hurt too, or it didn't cause any permanent damage. I didn't tell anyone. I just ran to the bathroom. I was so scared. I shocked myself.
She says her father was a carver, and she's glad to be following in the family tradition. Kaysinger's interest in carving first started when she was a teenager and took a class with Wrangell's Johnson O'Malley program. It's historic that Kaysinger and Churchill are taking part in the effort because typically women have not been allowed to do this kind of work. Churchill says the Tlingit men did not allow women to touch carving tools because women were perceived to have too much power, which could be transferred into the tools. Both Churchill and Kaysinger have plans to continue honing their carving skills even after adzing is complete by apprenticing in February with master carver Steve Brown. He'll be in town carving the three-dimensional bear screen for the house.
We learned specifically for this, but we've both wanted to carve wood forever, and you know, we just gotta, you know, follow the path. We're going down the right path.
Churchill and Kaysinger say the next step is to clean up the traditional lanterns and other artifacts found in the house. Both say they're proud to be taking part in the project and are looking forward to the rededication ceremony, which is set for May of next year. In Wrangell, I'm Ariel Van Cleef.
Members of a legendary jazz ensemble that started in the big band era have been mentoring school kids in Anchorage. Members of the Count Basie Orchestra spent time with middle and high schoolers at 18 schools across the city, including with students from West High and Romig Middle School. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
One, two, three, four, one. Okay, you missed a note.
That's a member of the Count Basie Orchestra working with band students at Romig Middle School.
Around the world, jazz is respected and known as the only true indigenous American art form.
And for that reason, Dennis McCrell says it's just as important as reading and writing. He's the director of the Count Basie Orchestra, which is credited with helping pioneer jazz around the world as America's signature sound. 12th grader Anna Klink is the band's lone flute player. She thinks the visit is awesome.
Because we don't usually get like a whole professional band in here helping us. We'll have one or two professional people coming in, but it's really nice to have a whole band that can just give us examples of what a good sound is.
Michaela Winchester is in 10th grade. She plays third trombone and is the band's manager. She's also a vocalist.
Every day I have the blues.
Scotty Barnhart, a trumpet soloist with the Basie Band, gives some feedback.
The first thing that I like to say is that it was a great job. Energy, I mean, I was really surprised to hear that much energy. And it's just a few little things, the little small things that'll make it even better.
Music is one of those things where even though you can look at it on a piece of paper and you can learn the notes, it really is basically a tradition that's handed down from older musicians to younger musicians.
McCrell says you can tell students how to finger notes on a saxophone or position on a trombone, but what the older musicians are giving to the younger players is
the inflection that goes behind a note, the emotion that goes behind a note. Those things you can't get from a piece of paper.
He says students like the ones at Romig are the ones that will help carry the tradition forward. At least one student felt that way after the session, 8th grader Eric Fosco.
I mean, there's like so much stuff that I got out of this today. This is like something that's like priceless. And I just got a lot of practice ideas and just like what a band should sound like. So when we played and then they played the song after us, it was just like 10 times better. And these guys are like the example and the inspiration.
That was KSKA reporter Daisha Eaton. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Baird in Kodiak, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Lorelei Kunin in Nome, Aaron Selbig in Homer, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Ariel Van Cleve in Wrangell, and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The REAA School Board election is October 2nd. Polls are open 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. Bring your voter ID card, driver's license, state ID card, tribal ID, or other ID when you go vote. If your name is not on the list, you may vote a question ballot. Information on the question ballot envelope is used to register or update your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring somebody to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections. The Kinnick Arm Bridge will create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.